You're listening to the Sportsman's Nation Podcast Network, powered by Interstate Batteries. From your truck to your trail camera, Interstate Batteries has you covered. Visit your local Interstate Battery store today or online at interstatebatteries.com. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
President and founder of Outdoor Edge, David Block, is on the show. We discuss the beginnings of Outdoor Edge, replacement blade knives, staying innovative, and more. I hope you enjoy the show. You are listening to Tales from the Field, presented by Outdoor Edge. Stories, tips, tactics, and in-depth conversations coming to you from industry leaders. Let's get into the show. Today we have the owner of Outdoor Edge, David Block, on the podcast. How are you doing today, Dave?
Hey, great to be here. Good visiting with you, Zach.
Yeah, I'm really looking forward to it. You know, we spent a little bit of time in Kansas chasing around some cagey whitetails last year and got to know each other a little bit. But we never talked at all about the story behind you and Outdoor Edge. So I figured today it would be kind of great to discuss your background and why knives, you know, why Outdoor Edge, and just kind of learn where the brand and the company came from.
You bet. No, so it's been doing this for 32 years, so there's definitely a story to tell. So I think growing up as a kid, I always loved knives. My grandfather was a knife collector and grew up with knives. I did a lot of camping as a kid, did a lot of outdoor activities, was heavily involved in Scouts, Cub Scouts at the early end, and Weeblos and Boy Scouts and summer camp. But always was fascinated by knives and loved knives. You know, being a young boy, and when I was first, you know, taught responsibly in Scouts on how to handle a knife and how you hand a knife to another person, how you safely open and close a knife, I thought that was the coolest thing, being a little kid and being given the responsibility of handling this potentially dangerous item, you know, that could really hurt you. But being a little kid and saying, hey, we're going to teach you how to do it responsibly. So that was awesome. I instantly fell in love with knives as a kid from that. And,
yeah.
Knives and hatchets and axes, anything with a sharp edge was just really floated my boat, per se. So, with that, always loved knives, always loved the outdoors. And interesting story I'm going to share is I grew up shooting a lot, shot a lot of guns as a kid in summer camp, shot a lot of bows. I did not come from a hunting family, so I never grew up hunting. And
really?
So another interesting thing is that I was going to the origin of Outdoor Edge was really a college project. So I started Outdoor Edge right out of college. I have to say that I was destined to become an entrepreneur. I always wanted to start my own business. I was always in jobs where I was involved in sales and dealing with the people. So I always liked, you know, meeting with people, interacting with people. I like selling, and I wanted to invent my own product and then take it to market and go out and sell it. And lo and behold, it ended up being a knife. So I was going to engineering school, and story is for my senior design project, actually for my senior year, it was my last semester, and I overlooked that I needed two more credits in my department to graduate. There were two more required credits, and there was no two-credit classes. They were all three-credit classes, and they were hard classes. So my last year, I wanted to kind of take my workload off a little bit. So the only two-credit class started at 8 in the morning, and I'm a bit of a night owl, so I didn't want to didn't think I would make this 8 a.m. class, since I usually started class at, you know, 10 and went into the afternoon and studied at night. So I went to my department head and said, hey, I have this idea for a knife design. Can I do this project for the final two credits? And he was a hunter. He approved it and basically worked on the design of our original knife called the Game Skinner. It was the first knife Outdoor Edge made 32 years ago. And basically turned it into a engineering design project where I did this, you know, stress analysis on the steel and how strong it was and what forces would break that T-post in the handle and different other aspects of the design. But turned my college project into a business. I basically graduated and had this knife idea. And then interesting story is Spyderco Knives is based in Golden. I went to Colorado School of Mines in Golden, Colorado, drove by Spyderco Knives every day home from school. And as I developed this knife idea, I wanted to have it made. So I went into Spyderco and met with the president of Spyderco, Sal Glasser, and told him I had this knife idea I wanted to make. And he says, oh, you want to get in the knife business, do you? I said, yeah. He's like, well, it's really hard. You know, there's a lot involved. And I said, well, tell me how to do it. Or tell me, you know, who can make this knife. And he really was a mentor to me. And he ended up putting me in contact with a very reputable factory in Japan that made high quality knives. And kind of the rest is kind of history. I went, I connected with this factory and we designed the knife and got it in production and went to my first SHOT Show, which is the Shooting, Hunting, Outdoor Trade Show. Went there in January of 1988 with four prototypes. Actually, my factory showed up too, and he delivered two more prototypes at the show. So I had six prototypes and hit the streets with the Game Skinner. I'll tell you another quick story. So that show was in January. In February, I went to the Minnesota Deer Classic, which was a consumer show with my knife. And a guy came up to the booth, and he goes, I show him the knife. He goes, what do you do? I go, what do you mean? He says, what do you do for a living? I said, well, I have Outdoor Edge. I have this knife, and I'm selling the Game Skinner. He goes, dude, you can't make a living at that. And I was like, well, I don't think I want to talk to you anymore, so go away, you know? And, you know, long story short, he was probably right. I probably couldn't make a living off selling one knife. So I made another knife and another one. And now 32 years later, we have about 130 different products in our line and have taken Outdoor Edge to a, you know, pretty prominent name in the hunting outdoor business. A lot of hunters out there are using our knives and they're working good. And kind of the American success story. Started with one knife and an idea and here we are now. So that's the long history from 32 years ago.
That's awesome. Yeah, I could imagine if somebody comes up and they go, you can't make a living at that. It'd probably just look at him and say, well, why don't you just stop looking at my knives, mister?
Yeah, like I drove here from Denver to Minnesota in the middle of winter, you know, to sell this knife, and you're like bursting my bubble, buddy. Yeah. Get out of here.
Yeah, no kidding. Well, so as your ideas evolved and the company started to grow, in the earlier on stages of Outdoor Edge, what was one of the biggest hurdles that you feel you had to overcome to take Outdoor Edge to the next level?
You know, one thing, starting your own business, financing is always an issue. There's never enough money when you're starting your own business. So money was one thing. And then number two would be distribution. So, you know, now we sell our knives in all the major retailers like Cabela's, Bass Pro, Sportsman's Warehouse. And those are big retailers, but they're very hard to open those doors. They're, you know, they really want you to be a popular brand. They want, you know, they want you to be, have good advertising and a proven product that's going to sell. So when we started out, we didn't have any dealers. You know, we didn't have stores selling our knives, and that was kind of my business model, was to sell it to dealers, to sell it to consumers. And we didn't have dealers. So what I did is I did a lot of consumer shows. So I was doing probably 15 plus shows a year, going to different sportsman shows, deer classics and whatnot. And I would go to a market and, you know, let's say I'd sell 50 or 70 knives at that show. And those knives went in the market and the knife worked, you know, people liked it. So word of mouth advertising would spread and did wholesale shows too. So it just took time to have dealers want to carry the product line. So I'd say financing and distribution are two of the biggest hurdles to starting a product sales company. And, you know, nowadays everything's changed with the internet and online sales and whatnot. But back then, you know, to really, we didn't have the internet at the level it is now. So really the only way to really make a success with a product like that is through distribution and through stores and sporting goods chains.
Gotcha. So. Yeah, I agree completely. I mean, the saying that the thing about a graveyard is that all the good ideas that everybody has goes with them to the graveyard, you know, and that goes completely in line with, you know, what you're saying about how it takes so much money to be able to get the idea from just that, the idea, right? And so with that, that actually kind of brings up an interesting topic. Like what kind of strategies did you use to approach maybe investors or to approach business partners, or maybe you figure out a way to find the money another way? Like, what kind of strategies did you use to fund your idea?
So started with a little bit of family money. My grandmother helped me with some money, and then my dad. I actually went to him when I was in a bind. I needed more money to buy the next shipment of knives from Japan, and he said he was going to help me. And then he found out that his mother, my grandmother, lent me this money. And he's like, "Oh, well, she already gave you money. I changed my mind. I'm not going to loan you money." And the knives were the bill for the knives was due. Like, I had to pay it, or he wasn't going to ship me the knives. So this is I'll try to tell this briefly, but basically I went I was trained in martial arts. My karate instructor was a hibachi chef at a Japanese steak restaurant, and went there, and sitting at the table with me was the president. He was the president of the Denver chapter of Safari Club International. And I met him, you know, at dinner, and he said, "No, it's really interesting." He was a big time hunter, and I told him about my knife company, and he was really interested. He said, "Well, let's go and have a one-on-one lunch. I'd like to learn more about you." You know, I had dinner with him and his two sons, and we had this lunch and told him what I was doing. And he said, "Well, if you ever need any financial help, give me a call." And I said, "Oh, well, thank you for that." And actually was doing fine for a while. And then I was at this turning point that I was just explaining where I didn't have the funds to keep it going. And I called him up and said, you know, we met a year ago. You said that if I ever need any help, give you a call. And we went and had a second lunch a year later. And just really fortunate. He was another mentor, father figure to me. And he gave me basically loans. The way we structured it was he would give me loans, and I would buy the knives, and then I would sell the knives, and then I would pay him back. And then when more knives were made, he would lend me money again. So it was this, he was my lifeline. It was like, basically, I would buy the knives, sell them, pay him back, buy more knives, sell them, pay him back. And I did that. He basically gave me these loans for 3 years at no interest. Got to the point where I had cash flow going, was able to run the business without his loans. So his name was John Feast, and he passed away about 20 years ago. But it's just one of those milestones in the business where I had a big hurdle, and one individual came to my rescue and let me take it to the next level. So that was definitely in the earlier years. I will add to that too that the first 10 years of Outdoor Edge was a struggle. You know, it was I worked out of my house. I shipped the knives out of the garage, and you know, classic entrepreneurial business, putting everything on the line with the hope and dream that one day it would be a success. A lot of determination, a lot of hard work, and you know, just believed in my idea and kept going.
Right. So with, you know, when you kind of conceived the idea of a knife back then, you know, now it's obviously a little bit different story, but and I want to get into that also, but back then, did you literally draw the knife, picture of it up on a piece of paper or whatever, and then send it to some type of CAD shop to draw it and then make prototypes, or what exactly, yeah, how did you get it out of your head and into their hands?
Yeah, that's a great question. So one of the things is as far as my education, getting a degree. My degree was in mechanical engineering and metallurgy. And back then, PCs were just starting to get popular. So as far as the CAD programs, there was CAD, there was AutoCAD back then, but didn't teach in school. Like, I never learned AutoCAD in school. But what they did teach you is some really detailed drafting classes. So as far as my education, learning how to draw and draft and, you know, I guess in summary, like learning how to communicate technical details to a manufacturer, there was no better degree that I could, there was no better course of study I could have followed. So getting the engineering degree gave me the tools to communicate technical details to a manufacturer. So I kind of had the tools to communicate to these factories what I wanted. And I did do basically mechanical drawings with pencil and drawing tools, and then they converted it to CAD where we could manufacture it. So that was really important, because the thing is when you work with a factory, they're going to make a knife the way that they make a knife, and I want them to make it the way I want the knife to be made. So it's really important being able to communicate those small details. And when it comes to knives and manufacturing, it's all small details, and very, very meticulous with my designs and with what I want out of the design. So it's really, really important to be able to communicate those details to a factory.
Yeah. So after, you know, after the design and everything of the knife, of each knife, how do you decide, you know, what the handle is going to be made out of, or what type of metal you're going to use, or, you know, I mean, there's so much stuff out there. How do you decide which one you're going to use and then obviously have to mass produce?
Yeah, that's a really good question. So the thing is there are thousands upon thousands of knives out there, and knives are people's passion. People love knives. So there's knives that are made purely for aesthetics and beauty. Like, they're just beautiful knives, but they're not really designed to be used. And then knives have evolved to become so specialty for specific uses. So the thing is ultimately, you want to basically decide what that knife is going to be used for. What is the function? And there's so many details that go into making that knife perform optimal for that specific use. You know, is it going to be a slicing tool? Is it going to be a skinning knife? Is it going to be a chopping tool? Blade length, blade grinding, heat treatment, the geometry of how the blade is profiled, the handle itself, ergonomics, you know, how it fits your hand. So all these details. But when I design a knife, if you look at the Outridge line, I design purely for function. Function is number one. I want that knife to function as an extension of your hand. So basically, with a knife, you put your hand in motion, and what your hand does translates to that blade. So a knife needs to be, you know, one, ergonomic. It needs to fit your hand, and it needs to fit not your hand, but everybody's hand.
Right.
So I try to come up with a one size fits all handle where I'm gonna shape the handle, but then I have women in my office, some more petite women, and I'll make different prototypes of different sizes, and I'll say, how does this one feel? How does this one feel? And basically I'll hand it off to someone with a bigger hand. So I'll basically come up with a couple renditions, and I'll come up with something that everyone likes, and everyone says, yeah, that fits my hand the best. So it's kind of a science to it to get that right shape and right size. But basically, when you get a really comfortable handle, all that force, all that motion that goes from your hand translates to that blade and makes the knife cut better. And with that, lots of other details. Again, I made it kind of a long list of details, but balance. The knife needs to be balanced very well. So for a skinning knife, you're going to basically do a lot of arcuate strokes. So you want the balance to be right in the palm of your hand. Now, for a knife that you want to use for chopping, more for impacting, you want it to be more blade heavy. So you move that balance point further out in the blade. So it really, really comes down to what is the function of that knife and what it's going to be used for. And you use those, you know, design criteria in the design of the knife. So, you know, one knife that might be good for this, it's not good for that. So it's not one size fits all when it comes to knife design. So you really focus on the details to make that knife function optimal for that specific purpose.
Gotcha. Yeah, that makes perfect sense. Because, I mean, as soon as you started mentioning that, what automatically came into my mind was the difference in, say, the Brush Demon and the Razor Max, right? So
great comparison.
You know, as soon as you said something for chopping, I want it to be blade heavy. And I immediately was like, well, that sounds like the Brush Demon, and that's what you do with that thing, you chop. And then, you know, you're like skinning, you want the weight to be more in the handle. You want to do exactly what the hand movement is doing. And I was thinking, as you know, I was literally thinking when I used that knife to skin out my South Dakota deer and also to cut meat at my house, and I was thinking those two pretty well hit it right like it's supposed to.
Yeah. So my tip to you, when you go to a store and pick out a knife, let's say you're going to buy a knife for skinning and field work, you know, grip the handle, like grip it all different ways in your hand and make sure it's comfortable, because you're always going to change your grip when you're working an animal. And then again, I really stress the point that the balance needs to be in your palm. If there's any weight coming forward into that blade, it's going to be clunky. It's going to be cumbersome to do those skinning strokes. Whereas if it's really balanced and the center of balance is in your palm, it's going to flow just like more like air. It's just going to flow in your hand. It'd be easier to change angles and then do those skinning cuts. So really, depending on the application, two different design criteria. You know, one thing you asked me about materials and whatnot. So as far as steel, you need to have a good quality steel. We pick really good steels for our knives. We don't per se use super steels. When I say super steel, I'm referring to kind of like a custom knife maker and aficionado knife nut type steels. And, you know, they may hold an edge longer, but they're also extremely hard to resharpen. They're also a more costly steel to purchase. They're more costly steel to grind because they're harder to grind. And you may get 10% more edge retention out of that knife. But when you add all the other factors in, you have a knife that costs twice, you know, up to twice as much just by changing the steel to a very specialty steel. So we generally use what I call bread and butter steels. So steel is one thing, and heat treatment is everything. So you can take the best steel out there. If you don't heat it, treat it correctly, you're never going to put an edge on it. It's never going to cut well. It's never going to be sharp. You can take an average steel, and heat treat it correctly, follow the proper heat treatment sequence, and you're going to have a razor sharp knife that cuts, holds an edge, and can be easily resharpened. So really, the heat treatment is the cookbook recipe. It's kind of like, I'll give you an analogy on that. Like, think about baking a cake. So you take that cake and you overcook it. You know, you cook it. You dry it out. It's all crumbly, and it's just crumbles, and it's not good at all. And then you undercook it, and then it's all mushy and soft. But then when you get that cake and you cook it all right, and all the flour and sugar, everything kind of binds together, and you get the right structure, then you have a wonderful cake. Same thing with steel. Steel is constructed of grains, and basically through the heat treatment process, it's how those grains grow and align and how the carbides form in the steel. It's basically a cookbook recipe where you're following that heat sequence and you get optimal grain structure where you have strength. You have also strength is one thing, but also ductility, that the steel is flexible. Because if it's too hard and too strong, then it's brittle, then it'll crack. It also won't form a good edge, because as you try to form that edge, it doesn't take that fine, thin edge to it. So it's several things combined. That proper heat treatment process gives you really the proper performance out of that blade. So we use good steels. You know, if you look at the price of our knives, we don't make expensive knives. We make knives that any average hunter can afford, And you're not going to pay a lot for an outdoors knife, but you're going to get a knife that's razor sharp and it's going to cut good and it's going to hold an edge. And when it's time to sharpen again, it's easy to put an edge on.
Well, that actually brings up a really great next talking point. And it was something that you brought to my attention when we were there in Kansas. You mentioned, the fact that when it's time to touch up a blade or resharpen a blade, run your thumbnail along the ridge of that knife, and you can feel the little burr there. And you had said, yeah, all you really got to do is knock that burr off, and it should be pretty much razor sharp again. And I laugh now because I remember I was counting, I'm like 31, 32. And here you are, you're like, no, all you need is like 5 or 6. And you're just like, whoop, whoop. And it's like razor sharp again. So maybe go over a little bit of resharpening.
Sure.
and some good practices for resharpening.
You bet. So my number one tip on this topic is never use your knife to the point where it's really dull. So I'm going to compare this to a butcher shop or a commercial meat packer. So in a commercial meat plant, they have the knife sharpened every day at the end of the day. But then during the day, they have a steel, a butcher steel on their side. And they are hitting that steel every 5 minutes. And what the steel is doing, it's not removing metal. Butcher steel does not sharpen the knife. What it does is it keeps the edge straight. So steel, again, I mentioned that it's made up of grains. As you use the knife, and a knife that's really sharp, comes to a very, very thin edge. Well, that thin metal at the edge is also is having a lot of forces applied to it, side forces, cutting forces, and the grains tend to they move out of alignment. So basically, by hitting it with a steel, what you're doing is straightening that edge and keeping that fine V-shaped geometry at the edge. So a butcher is going to basically use his knife. He's going to cut. Even when the knife is sharp, it's cutting great. Just stop. And it's not really feasible in the field to carry a butcher steel, but we make some draw-through sharpeners, some fine ceramic sharpeners. One's called the EdgeX and the EdgeX Pro. But it has two white fine grit ceramic stones. They're set at the perfect angle of 44 degrees. And what you do is use your knife, cut with it, every 5 minutes stop and draw it through that sharpener, six strokes through the fine ceramic. And you're not sharpening, you're not removing metal, you're just keeping the edge straight. And by doing that, your knife's gonna hold an edge two or three times longer than if you waited to the point when it's dull. Like everyone knows a dull knife and everyone hates sharpening. And really when you have a dull knife, it takes time. It takes a lot of work to really put that edge geometry back on it. And by maintaining your edge and constantly tuning it, you never let it get to the point where it's really dull.
Gotcha. So, yeah, I am one of those people that I despise sharpening knives, and I'm so bad at them. And I can be 100% honest with you, Dave. Your knives it's not helped me get better at sharpening because I just changed the blade.
we kind of fixed that problem. It's been a popular deal. Like, heck, I don't want to sharpen it. Just put a new blade in. There you go. That works. So, and that's something there too. Is I share this with people. Of course, we're in the replacement blade business, and we do sell quite a few blades every year. But those blades, you can sharpen them. It's very thin. It's got a very acute angle on it, and again, if you use the same process, get one of those EdgeX sharpeners and draw through the blade every 5 minutes, you're going to replace blades much less frequently. So probably just lost some blade business by that tip, but I really encourage people to touch up your replacement blades. It works really well.
Sorry to interrupt this episode, but Outdoor Edge wanted to inform you of an absolutely huge giveaway that these guys are doing. If you've never been elk hunting before, listen up, because this giveaway is for you. Outdoor Edge is giving away an elk hunt, a 5-full-day elk hunt where you get to ride a horse 7 or 8 miles to the backcountry, sleep in a wall tent, have a guide running you up and down the mountains trying to get you on elk, and you're going to be hunting with the president and founder of Outdoor Edge, David Block. This is a once-in-a-lifetime opportunity, so here's how you enter. All you have to do is go to OutdoorEdge.com and look on their homepage. They're going to have a little link that you have to click to enter this giveaway. It's in big, it's big wording. You can't miss it. Enter in some information, submit it, and you're automatically entered. There's nothing else you have to do. So OutdoorEdge.com, fill it out, and you're entered. Let's get back to the episode.
I know several people that do that exact same thing. I do it sometimes. You know, it depends where I am and what's going on, how big of a hurry I'm in. But yeah, that's one thing that I've definitely noticed about your replacement blade knives for sure is you know, the blades are a little bit thicker than maybe some others on the market, and it, you know, it allows you to actually be able to reuse them more frequently. So
I'm sorry. One of the things I was going to explain it about the about our replacement blade knives, it's not just the fact that they're replaceable, but what makes them cut so good is that it actually is a razor blade. So just like flay knives, if anyone is out there has used a flay knife to cut up their deer or cut up fish, flay knives work so good because they're thin. Hunting knives generally are thick because you need a strong knife. Well, our replacement blades kind of cross both areas in that you have the black oxide coated blade support, so it's kind of a sandwich support that gives you the you know, the strength of a regular knife, but then you're actually doing all your cutting with a thin razor blade. So that thin razor blade, it just has much less friction than a regular knife, but then you have the backbone to support it. So it really cuts different than any other knife out there. So it's kind of the best of both worlds, where thin razor blade and also a strong backbone behind it.
Right. So that brings up an excellent design topic. You know, with other replacement blades on the market, how did you come up with the idea to be, you know, think, hey, you know, I think that this blade here is just going to be much more efficient if it's got kind of a backbone that we run the blade into to help support that blade and things like that. So where did that idea come from?
So I'll say that, you know, as the owner and designer of Outdoor Edge, everything we do is we try to do everything different. My goal is to make a better knife. I'm not going to make, you know, we've made knives that are similar to some of our competitors and they've never been successful. So I'm always trying to really give the people a better product with improved function, improved performance. And, you know, at the time, you know, we were kind of an emerging brand and we had some popular products on the market. We had some combo sets like the Cody Pack, and we had the Swing Blade. Actually, we had the Swing Blade out for several years. It's a rotating blade knife with drop point skin on one side, gutting blade on the other, and it rotates back and forth. And that was our hottest selling hunting knife at the time. And then Havilon came on the scene. So Havilon was basically a medical supply company that makes the sharpest surgical scalpel blades on the market. And I looked at that knife and I said, you know, that's really cool, but there's not a whole lot of blade there. So that's, you know, it's probably good for caping. I think taxidermists will like that. Maybe some hunting guides that want to cape out ahead, but I didn't really see a scalpel blade as a viable blade to really, you know, go to town and field dress and skin an animal. And that's where I was wrong. You know, Havilon made an amazing success of taking their scalpel blade and really bringing it to the people. And as I would go into stores and I saw their assortment grow. I just saw their models like this wall of Havilon. And then I would go into hunting camp and guys were taking Havilon knives in a hunting camp, and I said, "Wow, I thought this was just a caping knife, and I'm wrong. This is really popular. People really like the fact that you have a knife that you don't sharpen and replace the blade. The two limitations there is their scalpel blades. They're really rather thin. They're 0.4 millimeters thin, and and they fracture rather easily. They're made for cutting, and they're made for cutting very delicately. If you look at the handles on their knives, they're pretty minimal handles. So you don't want a beefy handle that you can put a lot of force in the blade because the blade snap. Once the blade snap, the lock that holds that blade on, you have to actually flex the blade to remove it. So I heard all the you know, I've seen the battle scars, and I've heard the stories from going to trade shows, and people say that, yeah, man, I use Havilon. I love it. And it's like, and they tell me the story of how they, you know, cut themselves open by breaking a blade and having it lodged inside the body cavity. And they went in and tried to find it, and then they found it, and it got them really good. So really, long story short, there are two shortcomings of the Havilon I wanted to fix. And one was that the blades aren't strong and they snap easily. So I came up with the idea to come up with a sandwich support, a three-layer support that basically encloses the blade itself and gives it that strength so the blade won't break. So that was number one. Number two, what I wanted to do was make the blades easy to exchange. So I was really focused on my design goal was to push a button in the handle that would release the blade. So that's really the mother invention right there, was a strong blade that wasn't going to snap, and then I could push a button in the handle to release the blade. So those two things combined is really the game changer behind the Razorlight knife and the whole Razorlight series. They all use the same blade style, blade locking mechanism, and you know, we've turned it into, you know, it's been out for about 7 years, and we've turned it out to a whole family of different knives, and now even different blade styles that take that same locking mechanism.
Gotcha. Cool. Well, I've really enjoyed your knives, and like I say, it has definitely made it so I do not have to get good at sharpening them. But you know what? Like, you know, let's be honest. When I'm out in the field, and even if I were good at it, and it takes me a couple minutes to resharpen, you know, the blade, I would just as soon literally open that thing up. It's razor sharp. I can most likely do the entire deer and then fold it up. And then when I get home, I change the blade. Yes, I absolutely take extra blades with me, and they're so light that that's one of the perks, right? The extra blades are pretty well lighter than any type of sharpening steel or stone that you can get out there. There's some that are super light. I'm not, you know, somebody can jump on here and, but yes, there's some super light sharpening tools. Absolutely.
Yeah.
But conversely, the blades that you replace with are also super light.
No. When it comes to the remote hunter, a guy that's going to go sheep hunting or backpack in the high country, every ounce counts, and you can carry one of our Razorlight EDCs and a few extra blades, and there's no task you can't accomplish. You know, if you got a moose, you're going to skin out that whole moose and have sharp blades with minimal weight. So it really is a unique solution for the hunter there.
Absolutely. Absolutely. So with everything that we've discussed and having that many knives in your lineup, the struggle must be real to come up with something innovative every year, I would assume, right?
You said it. No, you said it. It's always a challenge. You know, the thing is you're only as popular as your last success, and innovation drives the industry, and new drives the industry. You always need something new. And to be honest, I don't know where the ideas come from. A lot of them come in the shower or out on the water fishing or just I really don't know where they come from, but they just seem to come. And we don't come out with a ton of products every year. You know, again, my focus for Outdoor Edge is really function driven. So I'm not just going to make a knife to make a new knife. I'm going to make a new knife because it's a solution to a problem, and it's going to make people's lives easier. So it's always a challenge, but the new ideas keep coming. So I feel fortunate for that.
Right. Absolutely. So, not getting too much into designs and everything like that, but what type of stuff can listeners be excited for and looking out for Outdoor Edge to be, you know, coming out with?
You bet. No, I'll give you give you a quick overview of that. So, you know, basically we've had the Razor Light on the market for 7 years, and we've done everything with one blade style. Basically, it's a 3.5-inch draw point blade. And people asked me over the years, well, are you going to come up with different styles of blades? And I said, well, what can't you do with a 3.5-inch draw point blade? Which seemed like a good answer at the time. But long story short, last year, we came out with our first fixed blade replacement blade knife. And it's called the Razor Max. So fixed blade is one thing, but the real key feature there is that it has the 3.5-inch draw point blade, but it also has a longer 5-inch boning fillet blade. So that longer blade comes a little bit further out of the blade holder, another 1.5 inches out. So you really have a flexible tip. So you have a flexible boning fillet type blade. And then, you know, if you want to do your skinning field dressing, you put in the skinning blade. And then if you want to do some deboning or cut some steaks, you switch to the 5-inch boning blade. So that's the Razor Max. Now, new for this year, we came out with the Razor Bone, and we came out with a third blade style, which is a gutting blade. So now with, you know, one of the main differences is the Razor Max is fixed blade. So with that 5-inch blade, it goes in a sheath. It's a sheath knife.
Right.
So with the Razor Bone, I took that 5-inch blade and turned it into a full-size folder. So okay. Now the 5-inch blade closes in the handle. So you have 3.5-inch drop point blade. You have 5-inch boning fillet blade. And you have a gutting blade. So you have all three blades to open the animal, you know, field dress, skin it, debone the meat. It's super lightweight. And then it has a sheath that holds all your spare blades. It also has a molded blade box. So you're out in the field, you're going to use the gutting blade, the draw point, and the boning blade. Now you got three blades. And how do you pack them out? You got these exposed razor blades. So we made this molded box, and it'll hold one piece of each blade. So you can store the live blades in this box and carry everything out of the field. Use all three blades, carry them out safely, all in a very lightweight, compact package. So that's the new Razor Bone for this year.
That's awesome. That sounds like an awesome knife with a lot of innovation and allows you to do a little bit more than just, you know, having the fixed blade Razor Max like you were discussing. And much like you and I've discussed before, especially for somebody that goes backpacking, being able to fold it up and then put it in the backpack, that is, in my opinion, that's a huge bonus. I absolutely love the Razor Max, and it feels great in the hand. It's as far as how it feels in the hand, it's my favorite. I would say that I've tested of your knives. Obviously, I haven't tested all 130 or 40, whatever, however many you said. But out of the ones I've tested, it feels to me the best. And the only thing, and I even told you, I said, "Man, that thing feels so great. I really wish I could fold it." And look at that, you went and
you went and
made that happen. So that's so cool.
Yeah, generally, if it's being asked for by a number of consumers, we're probably going to meet that request and come up with some, give the people what they want. And, you know, really ultimately, I call out the Edge, the Field to Freezer Knife Company. You know, I love hunting. I'm passionate about my hunting, but for me, the real joy comes with, you know, processing the meat and knowing that I harvested this animal and that I field dressed it properly. I cooled it. I cut it, I wrapped it, and then when I sit down with my family and have a delicious meal of venison, you know, fresh steaks off the grill, the hunt comes full circle. The hunt comes full circle for me, and it's like sitting down for that meal with my family, it's like it just all comes together, and it's why we hunt, and it's why we enjoy, you know, the outdoors, and it's the whole experience, and, you know, that's why cool thing about, you know, Outdoor Edge makes a number of kits where you can process your game, but they're big kits in a hard case. And with that Razor Bone, really that folding knife, lightweight, compact, and you can gut the animal, you can skin the animal, you can completely butcher it all with one knife. So it's kind of the field to freezer solution with one knife. So pretty cool on that. But you know, it's, as I say, we make a lot of different knives. We've never made a bad knife, but it's some are more popular than others. And you know, I think with some of the latest things that we've come out with, really, really just good, solid tools that make the job easier for the hunters out there. And that's really my passion, just giving the people the tools they need to once the animal's down, to get the job done and get it done safe and easy.
Yep, absolutely. And then on top of that, you're, is, you know, as simple as it may sound, you're also making the outdoors a more enjoyable place. Let's be honest, because I've been out there when I had a dull knife and I didn't have anything to resharpen it. And there I was trying to do what I needed to do with a dull knife. And if I would have had a sharp knife or replacement blade, much like you offer, not only would it have been way more enjoyable, but it would have taken way less time. So you're also handling that as well. And what I would love to do, Dave, is have you back on the podcast in the future, and you and I can dive into what it takes to breaking down and processing animals and getting those from the field to the plate and some of the strategies and all that stuff that you use to make that happen as efficiently as possible. I think that would be a really great podcast.
Yeah, would love to jump back on and talk about proper field care, proper processing of the meat. It's the best protein out there. And again, really passionate about the meat that we harvest and enjoying it with the family. So I'd love to discuss that with you.
Awesome. Thank you for listening in. Be sure to like, comment, subscribe, and share. Don't forget about the all-inclusive elk hunt giveaway that can be found at outdooredge.com/elk hunt giveaway. We hope to have you tuning in for the next episode.